From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, March 23rd, 2017. And on this day, a data breach in an online job search site that works with the State Department of Labor makes about 283,000 Maine records vulnerable. And blueberry yields are up, prices are down, and growers aren't happy. We'll have those stories in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs.
First tonight, officials with the Maine Department of Labor say they're working with a Kansas-based vendor and law enforcement to figure out how to protect Mainers whose personal information may have been stolen during a recent data breach. Steve Missler has more.
Labor Department spokeswoman Julie Rabinowitz says roughly 280,000 Maine records were vulnerable during a breach that now affects 4 million job seekers in 10 states. It's still not clear how many Maine job seekers are affected, but Rabinowitz advised anyone who used a Social Security number to access the state's JobLink website before March 16th to consider putting a freeze on their credit report. She said the state is talking to America's JobLink, the Kansas vendor that administers the website, to learn more about the breach and how to protect those affected.
We are very concerned to make sure that we do the right thing for the people who are affected by this.
Maine law allows residents to freeze their credit reports at no charge. Officials believe hackers breached the site between February 23rd and 26th after a software patch was installed in November. Maine signed a three-year contract with a Kansas-based JobLink last year. The online job search site and its security had previously been overseen by the State Office of Information Technology at a cost of $650,000 a year. The outsource contract saved the state about $48,000 a year. Rabinowitz says the switch to a new vendor was not a cost savings initiative, but one designed to meet new federal guidelines. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
The American Civil Liberties Union in Maine is urging local sheriffs and chiefs of police to resist pressure from the Trump administration to take part in immigration enforcement. As Patty White reports, the ACLU is warning law enforcement that if they do participate, they may face legal liability.
Under an executive order signed by President Donald Trump, local towns and cities are expected to provide direct support to U.S. immigration policy. If they don't, the order threatens to strip them of federal grant funding. But the ACLU of Maine's legal director, Zach Hyden, says if communities buckle under that pressure, they'll violate the rights of their residents.
Everyone here in Maine and everyone across the country has the right to be free from discrimination and racial profiling. But when local police officers who don't have a lot of training in immigration law start to try to act like immigration enforcers, there's more likely that they're going to engage in racial profiling, violating the Constitution.
Hyden says federal law does not require local law enforcement agencies to participate in immigration enforcement. And in a letter sent to Maine law enforcement on Thursday, the ACLU said it will provide support to them if they request it. Both the Maine Sheriff's Association and the Maine Chiefs of Police Association say they've scheduled meetings to discuss the issue and develop recommendations. In the meantime, says Robert Schwartz of the Chiefs of Police,
everybody is doing their job, and the job is to protect the public, and I don't believe that there's any issues there.
But the executive director of the Immigrant Legal Advocacy Project, Sue Roche, says since the immigration order, she has seen an uptick in what she describes as concerning incidents.
We have seen some cases where local law enforcement in certain areas of the state have been asking people for their immigration status.
Roche says asking about immigration status is not related to public safety, and she's concerned about the confusion and fear that the executive order has created.
People from the immigrant community need to feel like they can reach out to their police forces when they need protection, when they want to help out in an investigation, and it really creates a climate of fear when they feel that the local law enforcement is enforcing the federal immigration laws.
Roche says a number of Maine cities have adopted laws that specify a separation between local and federal immigration law. Meanwhile, she and Zach Hyden of the ACLU are concerned about a bill in the Maine legislature that would bolster the Trump administration's immigration agenda. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Finding a pack of blueberries these days is super easy. They are everywhere in both the fresh and frozen sections of the supermarket. But while the supply is high, the market price is low. And for growers, that's a big problem. Jennifer Mitchell has our story.
Ask a Maine wild blueberry grower how business is these days, and you'll likely get this.
Terrible. Just horrible.
That's William Rutledge. We caught up with him in Ellsworth, where he was attending one of several meetings organized by the Maine Cooperative Extension to discuss strategies for staying in business. Rutledge has a small operation in the Washington County town of Harrington, about 30 acres. A typical acre of blueberry barrens will yield about 2,000 to 4,000 pounds of berries, depending on pollination and other factors. It may sound like a lot, but the prices paid at freezer facilities to growers like Rutledge have slid into the pennies per pound.
Oh, 25, 29 in there. Half a cost of production, maybe. Not good.
10 years ago, the same pound of berries was worth $1.09 per pound. So what's going on? To understand the price slide, one needs a basic primer, Blueberry 101.
Well, traditionally cultivated blueberries are a fresh market fruit. Wild blueberries is traditionally a processed fruit.
Wild blueberry specialist David Yarbrough with Maine Cooperative Extension says you can roughly categorize blueberries into two groups, cultivated or high bush and wild or low bush. Wild blueberries, those found only in Maine and parts of Canada, are smaller, have a more complex flavor, and contain higher levels of antioxidants than their cultivated high bush cousins, says Yarbrough. Traditionally, the two fruits never competed, but recently, other countries have stepped up their cultivated high bush berry effort.
If you look at British Columbia, they produced 160 million pounds of blueberries. And, you know, you usually think as a high bush as fresh market. They froze 110 million of the 160 million. So all those blueberries are now sitting and competing directly with wild blueberries.
That's bad news for a Maine industry that sends only 1% of its crop to the produce stand and 99% to be processed in muffin mixes, granola bars, and frozen in bags. The state has pumped more than 100 million pounds of low bush fruit into the frozen market each year for the last three growing cycles. As with most commodities, prices have been fickle. For smaller growers, the ride can be especially bumpy. But one producer says he saw the writing on the wall a decade ago and started to make some changes. Worcester's Wild Blueberries in Orneville Township has about 70 acres in production. It's one of the few commercial berry operations in Piscataquis County. There's not much to see at the moment but a windy, snow-swept field. But unlike other small growers, Everett Worcester and his wife, Lee, seem optimistic about the summer harvest. Everett says for a long time he did things the conventional way and trucked his berries to a processor an hour and a half away.
From this farm and the other farm, to the freezer plant, either in Ellsworth or Orland. But the prices kept fluctuating so bad that we just veered off into another direction. We said, we need to get control of this.
So about 10 years ago, the Worcesters revamped their business plan and did the reverse of what other producers were doing. They started selling fresh quarts and pints of berries at farmers markets and then worked to get them distributed to nearby stores, bakeries, and food service outlets. Lee says after an investment of tens of thousands of dollars, they could do their own freezing and look for creative ways to diversify beyond the requisite jams and jellies.
Everett and I have developed, 15, 16 different products. We have a new product that's about to come out, Everett's Blueberry Salsa.
Blueberry Salsa? So yeah. What is that? I mean, you're taking blueberries places blueberries don't normally go.
You know how we develop a new product when customers keep asking over time, do you have? And then we develop it. And for what, 2-3 years, they've been after salsa.
There's also a barbecue sauce and a special line of wedding favors, tiny jars of blueberry jam called Something Blue. The profits made on value-added products like those bring stability, the Worcesters say, to an industry known for its volatility. But it didn't happen overnight. Dozens of growers, such as William Rutledge in Harrington, have no choice but to face yet another year of predicted low prices. In order to stay in the game, he says, everybody he knows is cutting back.
On future projects, on just workforce, less fertilizer, less bees, less everything.
David Yarbrough with Cooperative Extension says similar to what New England's small cranberry producers have been coping with for years, some wild blueberry growers will likely be forced out of business. Others will try to hang on until prices turn around. In the meantime, Yarbrough says consumers could have the biggest role of all to play. Buying and eating more Maine wild blueberries, he says, will help turn the market around. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine, Thursday, March 23rd, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.